Have you ever taken a week to remove yourself from daily obligations, to holistically focus on your well-being, or even target a specific area for personal growth, all within a supportive community and with experienced facilitators? What impact might this have on both your short and long-term well-being?
Welcome to the Thriveology Lab podcast, where we explore the science, philosophy, and practice of thriving. Our goal is to help you create a happier and healthier life through education, application, and transformation. Your co-hosts on this journey are Neil Utterback, that's me.
And Phil Dunwoody, that's me. Neil and I are both on the faculty at Juniata College, where we teach courses to promote human thriving and well-being. Before we get started, Neil, where can people find us?
Please subscribe to the Thriveology Lab on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a comment or question on YouTube, and we will be sure to respond. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and also LinkedIn. And you can also reach out with a question or comment at thriveologylab@gmail.com.
All right, today's podcast is kind of a follow-up on last week where we interviewed Marcel at Surf Synergy and talked about Surf Synergy as a retreat center and kind of the attentional focus there. So, but we didn't talk about any of the literature, which is something we typically do on this podcast, kind of what do we know, what are defining characteristics of a retreat, what are the benefits, what do we know about them? So we're going to be doing that today. So we're focused on the science and practice of retreats. And we'll talk about what makes something a retreat, like what are typical characteristics if you're going to try and define this. This is something Neil and I, we really went back like workshop, retreat,
yeah, right.
And some things we hadn't thought of as retreats because they weren't called retreats actually kind of fit the definition pretty well. So we'll talk about that. We'll share some of our own experiences, both attending and leading retreats, because that's something we both do. And we'll review some of the literature on how retreats impact your well-being. And I think importantly, these are not just short-term well-being things like, oh, I feel great for that week. And then the idea is that you bring something back with you, some change in focus, some personal growth that lasts well beyond the retreat. That is, I think, part of the purpose of a retreat. So the opening question you heard at the start of the podcast, and I'll just repeat here. Have you ever taken a week to remove yourself from daily obligations, to holistically focus on your well-being, or even target a specific area for personal growth, all within a supportive community and with experienced facilitators? What impact might this have on both your short and long-term well-being? This is a question that we made up to prompt you to think about the retreat and also kind of embed some of really what are these typical characteristics. It is something that I would dare say most people probably haven't done. Most people have done a vacation. We're going to talk about that. That comes up in terms of how they're similar or different. But before we do that, let's just talk a little bit. What are some typical characteristics of a retreat?
Yeah, and I think, you know, in that opening question, a lot of the elements are sort of baked into that, even that question. But, you know, that intentional focus on some aspect or multiple aspects of a personal well-being, personal growth, and there's often kind of an intentional setting at the outset of that retreat session, and then some sort of debriefing component afterward, which you don't often have in any kind of vacation setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that the term personal growth really means a willingness to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a great Zen story that I like that captures this quite nicely. It's a student is coming to a master essentially to learn more, to study more. And he starts by telling him everything he knows, basically kind of showing off his credentials and how studied he is. And the master's just listening. And as he's listening, he's preparing tea, which is very traditional Zen practice as well. The student's talking. The master starts pouring his tea into the student's cup. And as it fills up, the master just keeps pouring and it's overflowing and overflowing. And the student's like, what are you doing? Stop. And he's like, yes, exactly. You are like this cup. He's like, what do I have to add if your cup is already full? And I love that story because I've been on retreats with people who seem to come with the purpose of showing off everything they already knew. It was not. I don't want to put words in their mouth, but it didn't seem, from my perspective, that they were there for growth, but they were there more for ego purposes. And look how great I already am at these things. And that's not a good. That's not a good place to start if your goal is genuine growth.
Well, and you know, that even echoes back to some of the foundations of our mindfulness practice. And you know, if we're coming to a mindfulness practice with that constant beginner's mind, like I'm starting over, every day is new, everything is fresh, then I come to this sort of concentrated retreat time with that same empty cup beginner's mind, even if it's something you are a quote unquote expert on, right? How can I learn something new in this retreat session?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and these retreats, they tend to be holistic in focus. Very often it's not focused on one thing, but there's a focus on your diet and some movement and you know, very much kind of whole body experiences, often in nature. Retreat centers are often in secluded places or beautiful places, whether it's the mountains or the ocean.
And here's even too, like, you know, some familiar language, like you might go to sort of an all-inclusive resort and you say, well, is that what you're saying in, you know, at a beach community in Cancun or whatever? And is that what you're saying? Well, no, like often there is, again, this holistic, maybe it's all-inclusive in that all of these elements, your food, the things have been intentionally curated for a particular experience with a particular focus that's different than sort of just your all-inclusive experience.
Yeah, and that gets to this difference of vacation versus retreat, right, which we're going to talk about. That you're often surrounded by others with similar focus, right? And so whether it's a yoga retreat or a mindfulness retreat or anything like that, you're there with other people who want to grow in that same way. And that I think helps, you know, that community nature helps foster growth, right?
And you said, you know, that stepping away from your normal routines, again, sounds like a vacation as well, but it's, you know, as we think of it for ours, which we'll go in some more conversation about, you know, it's a concentrated week doing all the things that if your life was ideal, you could do in your regular life. Often it's very difficult for us to do, but you can try a fully realized version of that in that week. So it gets out of the sort of standard daily rut you might be in to really intentionally build that kind of life, such that, as your earlier point, when you come back, you might hopefully take some of that with you.
Yeah, I like that analogy of losing the forest through the trees a lot, because I feel like daily life is like that. We're in the trees, we're dealing with the minutiae, we're getting this done, we're getting that done. And retreat is this opportunity to step back and see the forest, see our lives in a larger context within our own lifespan, within our community. And that gives us, you know, a really different view. We've done episodes on, for example, meaning and purpose. And it's much easier to see that when you take yourself out of the matrix of the busyness and get a different perspective, a little bit more third person on your own life and how you're living. So, personal history with retreat. So, Neil, what is some of your personal history, either attending or leading retreats? And I wonder how consistent they were with the kind of the list of typical features that you and I started with.
Yeah, I started going to what was then Vista Guapa, now Surf Synergy, in 2004. At that time, when they first opened, it was very much kind of a vacation resort. And then once Rich and Marcel took over and really gave it this sense of intentionality, you know, you really then, I think for me, it really clarified this distinction between a vacation and a retreat for me. And there have been other retreats. Several years ago, I did a sort of a CrossFit-oriented retreat called Power Monkey in Tennessee, and it, you know, it fits all of those criteria. It's out in the woods in Tennessee. You're at this like camp situation. You eat all your meals there, and everybody's there with this idea of working on some of their weaknesses around gymnastics or powerlifting or weightlifting or what have you. And you get all of these experts and sort of competitors and athletes and professional athletes from around the country, around the world, coming there to train, but also to teach. But, you know, also then to your point, you sometimes get those people who are like, I know, and I'm just there to sort of prove to the so-called experts how much I know. And so, you know, that creeps into a variety of these sort of retreats. But, you know, I've also done these sort of weekend workshops that seem to fit many of those criteria, mm-hmm. but not all of them. And when you sort of, in my mind, when I compare and contrast them, I was like, what is that difference? And some of it's a little esoteric. It's about sort of intentionality. It's about sort of the framing of the whole week and the curation of the week, and that all of these elements are attended to that differentiates. So it's a bit on a spectrum. But I think what we're talking about here are these, you know, and we can talk more about our experience with Surf Synergy in particular. But you know, some of these things that have emerged for me, for us. Particularly around retreats, particularly around Surf Synergy. How about you? What are...
You know, my first one was, I was actually in 12th grade. It was my senior year of high school because I went to a Catholic all-boys high school. And at the end of your senior year, we went on a retreat. It was, I forget how many days it was. It was a few days, and it was, you know, within the woods kind of thing. It was a religious retreat. And it was meant as a place of focus, and reflection, and to think about kind of, you know, where you were headed in life. And I don't remember a ton of details from it, but I mean, I do remember enjoying the slower pace, and getting out of the busyness and, you know, again, that perspective that that gives you. After that, I started going to, Young's Martial Arts Association, YMAA is the organization I'm now affiliated with as a Tai Chi teacher. But when I started going to their initially workshops in Boston and then to their retreat center in California, I was not, I was just starting. I've been doing Tai Chi with other teachers, but I was new to YMAA. And it was called the YMAA Retreat Center. That's the name of it. And it was an intentional community in Northern California for Chinese martial arts and Qigong. And Qigong, for those of you who are not familiar with that term, it's really the kind of the Chinese term for what we would call meditation. And it can be seated, like we think stereotypically of meditation is seated, but it can also be moving. So Tai Chi it originates out of a Chinese martial art, a Kung Fu style, and it still has those martial applications, but it is also very much about meditation. And all traditional Chinese martial arts have very strong meditation components. So I would go out there for 2 weeks at a time, and every morning was 45 minutes of seated Qigong, seated meditation. But the things we're talking about, the food was a lot of it was kind of grown off the land there, family organic. Everyone there was there to study. And it was kind of this, again, this simplified thing, like you got up, you meditated, you ate, you trained, you slept, you and then you repeated. It was every day. And that just that simplicity of focus compared to our normal busy lives where we're pulled here, pulled there, pulled there. It really does get a centeredness and allows you to develop. You know, one of the things we talked about with retreats, sometimes they are focused on the development of some think that's important to you. And so that might be your meditation practice, might be my Tai Chi understanding, the depth of my understanding, my ability to share that as a teacher. So I've gone out there, I think I went and made 5 different trips out there over the years. And now I help teach at a much shorter one. It's about 4 days that's in Boston, or at Boston area. And it's in the woods. It's actually held at the space that we rent is from a religious retreat. And we have 4 days of training, and I help run them. I help lead the meditation sessions in the morning. And it's all Chinese martial arts. So I do the Tai Chi, but there's people doing essentially what's kickboxing and, a lot of other different Chinese martial arts. So it's a wonderful experience. And then you and I have led 6 trips now to Costa Rica with students. The last one was 22 students that we brought down with us that we just got back from.
And we'll talk about some of the science that supports this. But as we've said in previous episodes, like, we frequently have students coming back saying, this changed my life. I've like, well, and when you dig in, it's like, what about that cause, like, that caused that feeling? What changed your life? And I think you hit the nail on the head, at least for me, from my perspective, is like that simplicity and clarity of the week when you're able, under that kind of curated experience, to slough off all the rubbish and get at that essence. You figure out, okay, this is who I am. And I often, every time I go, even when we're leading the retreats or I go to Surf Synergy by myself, like, I always feel more fully myself. And, you know, I've over the years tried to, like, what is it about that? And I've, you know, made a list of a whole bunch of things. And one of the things you and I sort of joke about, like, I frequently come back and have, we're talking about a lot of the benefits. I frequently have a kind of rebound effect where the first couple of days or a week, I'm a little depressed after. I'm a little grumpy. This return, I was grumpy. And, you know, rather than simply try to get rid of those otherwise unpleasant feelings, I think, and we've said this before, like, depression, anxiety, or whatever, or even just grumpiness, are often, I think, signals from your body that something's out of alignment, out of whack. And so I've really tried to listen to myself about that feeling I've had, because if I felt that, it wasn't just like being away and being all those things and having this curated experience. There was something going on in that week that is not going on in my current life. What is it? And so, and then what changes can I make? What is in my control to make to recalibrate my daily life to more fit that week? And that's really the mission I've been on these past couple of weeks.
Absolutely. That's, I mean, every one of the things that stands out to me every time I go is how much better my body feels when I eat well. And I think I eat a pretty good diet anyway, but it's not as good as it is down there, you know, having someone cook all of your meals, you know, that are, again, local, organic, and just delicious food is helpful for sure. I need a personal chef. You know, one of the first times this hit me, it was early on when we started. I think it was actually someone from the very first trip we led back, we led down there. And I saw them a few months later, and I asked how they were doing, and they said, you know, I just feel so much calmer now than before. And I was like, really? And she said, it's not that there aren't busy things and I don't get stressed. I'm just better at keeping it in perspective. And I think that's to that forest through the trees thing that you and I were talking about, that if all you exist is in the forest and, I'm sorry, in the trees, right, and running and doing, and students have very busy lives like we do, sometimes, you know, you think that this, what really is a minor inconvenience, you in your head might be a huge stressor and emergency, right? And so you're responding with this major, you know, kind of sympathetic nervous system response threat. It's really not that big of a deal. Yeah. And that recalibration is part of what you get from a retreat.
And I think that perspective you're talking about is so important too, because, like, I think sometimes when we're in the weeds of the woods, that, you know, the available possibilities seem limited. And when you step back, it's like, okay, what could I actually do? What's actually within my control? What's actually feasible, viable for me to do? And suddenly, when you've got a little bit of distance and can look at it, you're like, oh, actually, life could look very different if I change this, tweak that, cut that out, add this a little bit more. Like, we often talk about, you know, these well-being things as sort of like an equalizer on a stereo. You put this knob up a little bit, pull this one down a little bit. If I make a couple tweaks, say, to my finances, if I take more control of my financial health and fitness, some of these other things are going to open up for me, and I could have a very different kind of life. It just may mean some different things than I'm currently living.
Yeah. Yeah. It's to break some of those automatic habits, force you to reflect and say, okay, this is how I have been living. Is that how I want to continue living? And it's that intentionality that's key. So how you and I have talked a lot about this, and I like how you frame this quite a bit. How is a retreat different from a vacation?
So one of the things we tell the students is when thinking about particularly the trip to Surf Synergy or any to a retreat, that the difference between a vacation and a retreat is that in a vacation, we're checking out of our life. In a retreat, we're checking in. And, you know, what does that mean? Like, we often go on, you know, you're stressed out from work, you've got all these pressures, and you I keep picking on Cancun. I'm sorry, Cancun. I'm not. You go
there,
to summer.
I bet there might be some retreats in Cancun, or at least close. Marlene, my wife Marlene, actually goes to a yoga retreat.
I'm sorry, Marlene.
It's not in Cancun, but okay. She flies in and out of Cancun.
Well, if you just go on vacation somewhere, you know, you're it might be restful for you. Chances are you're not working really diligently on some aspect of your life, so that when you go back to your daily life, you're pretty much the same and the world is pretty much the same. So all of those pressures come right back. And so you often hear people say, oh, I need a vacation for my vacation. Like, you know, like that the vacation is not as restorative. It might be restful, but you're not restoring some aspect of your values. Whereas in a retreat, you're saying like, something's out of whack in my life. I'm going to go deliberately working, doing some deep work on some aspect of myself, my behaviors, my habits, looking at my values. How can I try in that concentrated week to live more in alignment with those values, such that when I come back, I'm taking something with me to make some intentional change to my daily life to improve. And yeah,
you know, I was thinking even Bill Gates kind of famously used to take as a CEO of Microsoft, he would famously take a period where he would completely unplug and he would bring books and he would essentially do a retreat. And it was that same, forest trees thing. Mm-hmm. He was just trying to get a larger perspective on where things were headed, where the company should go. And so you find these even in business settings where you're talking about a retreat. So you're not just so focused on the daily tasks, you're stepping back and thinking really about the bigger picture.
And we'll talk some about, you know, often when we're talking about retreats, we're looking at some kind of you know, it's often physical in nature, Tai Chi, yoga, surfing, and there's some physical.
Or religious. Many of them are religious.
Or religious, right? But you can have creative retreats, right?
Writer's
retreats. Or, you know, often, people will go away to the woods to come up with some plan for their business with an intentional retreat condition. But, beyond just the anecdotal stuff that, in my own lived experience, is sufficiently validating. Like, I see it happen in our students. But I think we were excited to see that there is an emerging science around some of these retreats. That a lot of the recommendations that we have seen previously came from tourism boards or other people trying to promote these things. But there is a growing amount of evidence to support that what we hear anecdotally is actually true. So there was a 2017 study by Cohen et al. They found that a 1-week holistic wellness retreat, that's essentially sort of what we're doing, that focused on numerous education, therapeutic, and leisure activities, as well as providing a mostly plant-based diet, showed statistically significant benefits across a variety of domains. Most importantly, perhaps, was that those benefits sustained for 6 weeks after that. And you see this across a variety of studies. There's some lasting effect of it that is also, I think, for me, different than a vacation. Often when I come back from a vacation, I don't have any lasting benefit mm-hmm. from it. A retreat, there's sort of this ongoing integration of, like, even now I'm still working through some of my thoughts and feelings around our time in Costa Rica a couple weeks ago. I'm still trying to process and think about how that applies to my life right now.
Yeah, and there was another one we found, which was a 2018 review article of the health benefits of retreats, and they had 23 studies involved. I was surprised by 2,592 participants, variety of retreat types and benefits were found. And again, kind of there were immediate benefits, but they had some lasting 5 years shown from this. So and there was they also focused on some people dealing with chronic disease and benefits of the of a retreat for that. One of the things, and I'm just going to quote, this was kind of in their introduction, because you and I have talked a lot about this in previous episodes. Lifestyle-related chronic diseases such as obesity, diabetes, and lung disease are a global issue, which the World Health Organization estimates accounts for 60% of all deaths. These diseases are characterized by modifiable risk factors such as physical inactivity, unhealthy diet, such as diets high in salt, sugar, fat, alcohol, and tobacco, and exposure to environmental toxins. Right. So again, this a lot of chronic disease is lifestyle, mm-hmm. right? And some of that, you know, some of that might be the environment we grow up in that we don't have control over, but other components we do in terms of food consumption, activity level, and that is something that, you know, for the retreat that you and I lead is a huge focus, is thinking about diet, thinking about activity level, time in nature, mm-hmm. Time with other people rather than being on your phone. This, you know, we ask our students to reflect coming back. And one of the things that many of them reflect on is how little time they spent on their phone and how much more they enjoyed conversations during meals because they were talking with one another instead of all looking at their screens.
And some of that too, like, you know, we have a lot of athletes that attend, and many of them probably, I don't know the specifics of their nutritional protocols, but most of them probably eat relatively healthy. They have a dining facility
maybe.
Here, maybe.
Maybe.
But, you know, when – it's something – I think that's what I'm thinking. Is like even when you think you're doing the things that you could be doing, a retreat offers a chance to say like, am I though? And so, like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
You know, what now I'm like, and all they almost always respond about the food. Like, the food is so good, and I feel so light and energetic and healthy, and I just feel my body feels good. It's like, you know, there's probably a bunch of variables playing into that feeling, but food is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this 2018 review. Also, they considered a retreat as an intentional location that accommodates its guests for the purpose of learning, improving a body-mind activity, examples, yoga, Pilates, and or learning, receiving complementary therapies or treatments whilst there. And that covers a lot of what you and I talked about. We also talked about things like writing retreats and, mm-hmm. You know, martial arts retreats or Tai Chi retreats. And, you know, so there, I think you can, sometimes you have ones that are very focused in a specific area of growth. Right. Sometimes it's just general kind of wellness and well-being. But all the ones they studied, they found they produced benefits that included positive changes in metabolic and neurological pathways, loss of weight, blood pressure and abdominal growth, reduction in health symptoms, and improvements in quality of life and subjective well-being. And so it was a nice kind of, you know, we did not find a ton of research on retreats, right? And I think there's a number of reasons for that. One being that it's hard to do. It's costly. Right. You know, so if you're going to, you know, research involves resources, and to take people out of their normal life and put them in a location for a week where you're curating an experience, and that's costly to do, and drug companies are probably not going to fund it.
Right.
So.
Right. And I think one of the things you and I keep talking about, and we will eventually make this happen, is doing a study around even our class and our trip, mm-hmm. doing a pre, doing a post survey, and then a follow-up some years later, what effect still lingers there. Because here's another study, particularly looking at professionals in high-stress professions, like healthcare, social work, education. Folks in high-stress occupations are at higher risk for burnout. We saw that particularly during COVID with healthcare professionals just being overwhelmed and burned out. A 2022 study looked at the benefits of a yoga-based retreat intervention and prevention of anxiety and depression. They had 17 adult professionals from a variety of high-stress environments. It was a 5-day yoga retreat. It focused on mindfulness skills, increasing capacity for self-resilience and self-compassion. And they had a lot of anecdotal subjective responses. Here's one quote from a participant. Honestly, the tools like the breath, the things that focus and get us back to the present, have been the most useful, because once I'm focused and present in my situation and body, I can see the future in a more doable way. And I think that that echoes what you and I talked about earlier about that, mm-hmm. that forest for the trees, the perspective about stepping out, seeing it. When I'm in it, I can't see a way out. I can't see it through. I'm just grinding my gears. As soon as I'm offered the opportunities to step out, step back, suddenly possibilities emerge.
Spiritual retreats is kind of the next category. And a lot of what we found online when we were searching for this, and even in the research, was on spiritual retreats. And so this is a very common, like I meant, my first retreat experience was a Catholic one. And even the you might not think of a martial arts retreat as a spiritual retreat, but when it is so focused on meditation and Tai Chi is this very internal practice, and Taoism is very much kind of nature focused, that really does become a spiritual experience for me. So a study in 2019 by Gil Packer and Ballantyne, they talked about spiritual retreats as a restorative destination. Paper suggests the simplicity and quietness of a retreat fosters reflective activity and thus enhances well-being, because retreats are usually held in a quiet setting away from normal routine and responsibility. They provide opportunities for eudaimonic leisure, learning, training, and reflection, personal transformation and development, as well as restoration. I can't remember if we've discussed this concept of eudaimonia, which they're referencing here.
I'm not sure that we have either.
So eudaimonia is, you can think of, we all know what hedonism is, essentially, just satisfying basic pleasures, food, sex, things like that. Eudaimonia is a much kind of broader, it's saying, you know, well-being isn't just about being happy in the moment, which is this very fleeting thing. And I think the, potentially the hedonic approach leans more into that. Eudaimonia, it's not that it ignores that, but it also includes things like meaning and purpose in your life. It is this kind of much bigger picture, multidimensional idea of well-being. And I think that's where most of the research on well-being looks at. Though some of it is very, very also subjective in terms of your personal affect, your feelings, how happy or sad are you on a daily basis, because that matters. So another study is from 1989, Kaplan and Kaplan, and they talk about four qualities of a restorative environment. Being away, right, which we've talked about, being psychologically and often geographically removed from normal routines and distractions. Fascination, the environment effortlessly attracts and holds an individual's attention. I love that. Extent, the content and structure of the environment and whether it is of sufficient scope to occupy the mind. And then compatibility, there is resonance or alignment between the individual's needs and what the environment offers. Because you do sometimes have people who go on a retreat and it's just not for them. They're right. Not in the right headspace for it, or whatever. There's some mismatch. But reading over this list actually reminded me of one of the ones I did that was at home, right? Which we don't think of retreats as at home. This was COVID, right? This is during COVID. So, I'm certified through the Kuru mindfulness program, mindfulness for emerging adults, I think it is called now. They renamed it. One of the requirements is that you had to do a 3-day mindfulness retreat. And I was looking for things to go to. That's what I wanted to do, to unplug. And again, I do appreciate, being pulled out of my physical surroundings, but COVID made that kind of hard. And there were, during that time, online retreats that then popped up, the same people who had been running the in-person ones, and it was, of course, I'm still in my home, but I did my best to break my normal routines and responsibilities and really devote those 3 days to that mindfulness retreat. It was all over Zoom, so it was we were all doing the best we could. but one of the real benefits, now that I think about it, the drawback is that it might be harder for you to disengage, right? And that's something you want to do on the retreat. But a big benefit is it really lowers the cost of entry, because retreats can be quite expensive. You're asking someone to house you and feed you and all those things, where if there is an online retreat that you can do from home and you're able to try and, you know, break your routines as much as possible, that is a lower cost alternative that's worth considering.
And just to give a nod to other types of retreats, we talked a lot about sort of physical retreats, spiritual retreats, mindfulness retreats. Artists often use a retreat center as a way of, you know, particularly like those theater artists living in New York City will often retreat out to the country. I'm thinking of sort of the O'Neill Center in Connecticut to have a dedicated time with often other artists, maybe with a facilitator, a leader, helping to workshop something, develop something, write. This is from just an online article. They're saying that leaving home to work on creative projects ratchets up motivation and output for a few reasons. You've come all this way. You're less likely to waste time on social media. And uninterrupted writing time allows you to keep an entire book, album, series of paintings in your head at once, and you can more easily see the projects again, big picture of possibilities. And, you know, that time to dedicate on something that you can't do because everything's vying for your attention in your daily life, retreating out. And as you know, we're going to ask you in a second to think about your own retreat and artistic retreats. You often can think about like what level, and this is true for probably any retreat one could say, what desired level of feedback do you want? How much hands-on facilitation are you looking for? The timing, you know, when does this retreat happen? Is that part of it? You know, Costa Rica has a dry season and rainy season. I like going in the dry season. Yes, the rainy is very wet. Location, where is this? You know, to Phil's point, is it in your home? Is it in the city? Is it in the woods? Is it in the tropics? Like, where is it? And what other expenses do you have to sort of consider as well when you're considering that?
So the challenge this week, we'd love to say your challenge is to go on retreat.
Go to retreat.
and basically we're going to ask you to plant the seed, right? Mm-hmm. So if you were to go on a retreat, what kind would it be? I've gone on Tai Chi retreats, mindfulness retreats. Like I said, they're religious retreats. I know sometimes they're like marriage retreats, with couples retreats to kind of help. And it's not a vacation. It's to help strengthen your relationship. It's kind of a lot of facilitated communication type things. What would you be interested in? Look some things up and then try and imagine what a week or a weekend of focused, cultivated self-care might do for both your short and long-term well-being. And then consider the possibility of planning for one, right? So just plant that seed for yourself and see what grows.
Okay. That's it for this episode. Subscribe to the Thriveology Lab on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a comment or question on YouTube, and we will be sure to respond. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. If you have any questions or comments, or there's a subject you'd like to hear us discuss, please reach out to ThriveologyLab@gmail.com. Thrive on, friends.
Thrive on.